I hope all of you had a very blessed Thanksgiving day and good time with family and friends these last few days. This year, when I was at a friend's house for a big Thanksgiving dinner, I discovered something new on the table. It was ice cream filled with chunks of York peppermint patties, and it was amazing. And I had scoop and scoop and scoop and way too many scoops. And so I know that when we have our Advent penance service and I go to confession, top of the list will be gluttony right there. Too many scoops of York peppermint patties. This Advent, I'm doing a series. It'll be kind of multiple scoops of our Advent readings and of the message of the gospel. But it won't cause indigestion, don't worry. It won't be sinful by any means. It's an Advent series called Kerygma. Kerygma. Everyone say it with me. Kerygma. When you come in the church each week, you can grab a handout. Hopefully you have that already, which has an outline of the homily. There's some reflection questions and scriptures you can pray with during the week. If you're online right now with us, you can download that from the website or on Facebook and follow along each week as we go through the 4 weeks of Advent with Kerygma. Now, this is a strange word to most of us because it's not English. It's actually Greek. It's from the Greek of the New Testament. And the word basically means shout. The Kerygma is a shout. You could say proclamation or exclamation or a crying out. We hear Jesus say in John's Gospel on the last day of the feast, he stands up and shouted, he kerygmed, "Let anyone who thirsts come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as Scripture says, rivers of living water will flow from within him." It's a big promise to be shouted. So if the Kerygma means, in the most basic sense, shout, why do we use this word for the gospel? This word basically means like the gospel in a nutshell. If you had to boil down what is Christianity all about, you get the Kerygma. It's kind of like the basic essence of the Christian message. And it's a shout because it's worth shouting about. Now, why use this word Kerygma when we could use words like gospel or good news or message? Because they kind of mean the same thing, the essence of the faith, the essence of what God has done for us. Well, the issue is those words are all good, but they've lost some of their impact. They're not actually disturbing enough. Here's what I mean. If someone comes into a nice dinner party, let's say you're at Thanksgiving dinner, you're making small talk with some people around the table and chit-chat and this and that, and you're eating your chopped nut and cranberry salad, and you're kind of wondering, like, are these chopped walnuts or chopped pecans? I can't really tell. And then someone bursts into the dining room and says, "Everyone, get outside the house. Look at this, quick." That shout is disturbing. It disturbs what you are doing, and it actually demands a response. Are you going to come outside and see, or are you just going to sit here and be like, "Well, I'm kind of interested in this salad right now"? The Kerygma is disturbing. Not in the bad sense. The Kerygma is what happened 2,000 years ago. It's what's happening still today. And it's a positive message. It is good news. It is something hopeful. But it's a shout that stirs you up and demands a response. Like whatever you were doing before, like, doesn't matter anymore. Like whether these are pecans or walnuts, like, it's irrelevant. There's something bigger at stake here. Come and see. And that's what this shout is all about. So here's how Pope John Paul the Great defined the Kerygma. He said, "The Kerygma is the initial ardent proclamation by which a person is one day overwhelmed and brought to the decision to entrust himself to Jesus Christ by faith." It's a fiery proclamation. It overwhelms a person. And then it begins to allow a person to make a decision to entrust one's whole life to Jesus. That's what he said the Kerygma was, or is. So the reason why I'm doing this homily series at this time at St. Rose is because I want to make sure that all of us have the opportunity to ask, have I heard the initial ardent proclamation of what God has done? Have I been overwhelmed by the kerygma? Has it disturbed me? And have I actually made a decision to entrust my life to Jesus? Have I taken that action, really? That's what we're getting into this Advent. That's why we're doing this right now, because if we don't understand the kerygma, if we don't get the shout of Christianity, then Christmas makes no sense. Christmas is just a nice story with some nice songs. That's what we're doing this Advent. The kerygma has four basic parts to it. The first part is created. The second part is captured. The third part is rescued. And the fourth part is responding. Today we're going to go through created. And each of these parts of the kerygma has kind of a question with it. So the question in blue right there is, when we talk about creation, we ask, why is there something rather than nothing? Like, how did the world get here? Human history has given us many different answers to this question, which everyone asks in one form or another. Ancient religion said that the world is here because of divine violence, the gods fighting each other and warring, and then material creation comes out of this battle. Ancient philosophy, like in ancient Greece, would say that there is some kind of intelligent being connected with the world, but this being doesn't care about you. This being doesn't care about the affairs of human beings. It's very distant and unconcerned about this world. Modern atheism says that the world's basically random, that the world as we know it is chance occurrence, and any harmony or patterns we find in the world don't have any intrinsic meaning. They're just kind of algorithms and mathematics lining up, but there's no meaning to it. Christians have a different answer to the question of why is there something rather than nothing? How did the world get here? Christians respond that, in fact, Christians shout that the reason why the universe exists is that it was created by an all-good, all-loving, all-powerful God by his free choice, so that we could share his perfect joy. This is the first movement of the kerygma. We are created. Here's how the first line of the Catechism of the Catholic Church puts it. God, infinitely perfect and blessed in himself, in a plan of sheer goodness, freely created man to make him share in his own blessed life. That's a shout to modern ears. That's disturbing. That's overwhelming. And I just want to ask all of us right now, as we go through some of these things this season, like, where are your hearts at right now as you hear this? Really, like, what is rising up inside of you as you're hearing this shout? And can you sense how very different this answer is from all the other answers that we've been given throughout history? The world's not here because of a result of divine violence or the violence of the gods. No, God, when he creates the universe, he just speaks. There's no weapon, there's no fist. He just whispers, let there be light. And there was light. It's so gentle. It's like whispering a love poem into the nothingness. And as opposed to a supreme being who's very remote and distant, this is a God who's very intimately concerned with the affairs of his creation. He walks with Adam and Eve in the garden. He's very close to his original creation. And in contrast to the world being random and meaningless, this is a plan of sheer goodness. The universe has a deep inner meaning that we can discover and we can order our lives in accordance with. And in God's universe, everything has meaning and everyone matters. Everything has meaning and everyone matters. This is the Christian shout, the first part of the Christian kerygma. Christians proclaim also that the world reflects something of God's power and wisdom. Psalm 19 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies above proclaim his handiwork." Have you ever really considered the stars in the sky? The skies above? On a clear night, you can see about 6,000 stars with your eyes. This is a picture taken by the Hubble Extreme Deep Field Space Telescope in some part of the universe. And those stars have always fascinated humankind. And it's amazing to consider how many there are. How many stars do you think are in the universe, if you had to pick a number? The number is 200 sextillion. That's 200 billion trillion stars. And that's a lot. And we can't actually, like, internalize that number. Like, we just can't comprehend that. But this morning we're going to try. So we're going to try by talking about sand. So one grain of sand, tiny grain of sand, you can fit about 8,000 of them in a cubic centimeter. So if every star was a grain of sand, how much sand would you need to approximate how many stars are in the known universe? Here's what you do. Get in your car after Mass, drive 5 miles east on Highway 36. Get on 35 east south and drive another 5 miles. That's about downtown St. Paul. That's a 5 by 5 mile square. It's a long square of sand. But now think about that square and go up 5 miles into the sky. You've got a cube 5 by 5 by 5 miles, about as tall as Mount Everest. Fill it with sand. That's about what you need to approximate how many stars are in the universe. Maybe you just want to think about the Milky Way, just our own galaxy. Fine. Get your Ford F-150, drive up next to that thing, shovel out a bunch of sand into your pickup truck bed, drive back to your house, dump it out in your driveway, do it 9 more times, and there you've got the stars of the Milky Way, just our galaxy, on your front lawn. And then shove your hand into that big heap and pull out just one grain of sand, rub your hands together until you have just a tiny little grain on your finger shining in the sun. And that's us. That's our star. That's what we orbit. It's overwhelming. Like last night when preaching this, I almost cried. It was just so overwhelming about how vast is God's creation and that God made all of it by just freely choosing it to be. God spoke and it was made. Let there be light. And God says it was very good. It is very good. Again, where are your hearts at right now? There's not a right answer, but like, can you sense your spirit inside? We see the vastness of creation, the vastness of the stars, and we can ask, okay, where is our place in the stars? How do we fit into that? Well, here's the thing. Even though the stars and galaxies are amazing, God wasn't finished yet. God made human beings as the crowning jewel of creation. He created them male and female. He created them in his image and likeness. And that's something the stars don't get. They're amazing, they're radiant, but they aren't persons. They don't have that kind of dignity. You and I have human reason. You and I have free will. And even more, you and I are able to love and be loved. This is the reason for our creation. The reason that God created us is for us to live in a relationship of love with the infinite. The reason God created us is we might live a relationship of love with others. The reason God created us is that we would share in God's own divine life, world without end, even sharing his divine nature. That means that you as a human being, you as a single human being, spirit and body, you are worth more to God than all the stars put together. You have a dignity as one human being greater than the rest of the cosmos. That's what God did for us. That's the nobility God has given to each and every human being made in his image and likeness. God made us to live a life of joy, to enjoy him, to enjoy the gift of being alive in a universe where there's no pain or sickness or death. He created us. Now, right away, we ask, well, what happened to that life? Why is life so messed up right now? Well, we'll get to that next week. But for right now, we just take in the overwhelming glory that God created us out of love, through love, and for love. That's who we are. Jesus, in the gospel for the first Sunday of Advent, he says, "Beware that your hearts do not become drowsy from carousing and drunkenness and mint ice cream, and the anxieties of daily life, and that they catch you by surprise like a trap." The church gives us this scripture to keep us aware and awake for his second coming in glory at the end of history. I talked about that last week, but we can apply this as well to looking backward, because we don't want our hearts to become drowsy to the truth that we were created out of God's love and created good. We can forget the splendor of creation. We can forget our inner goodness, which isn't totally distorted by sin. God created us good out of his love, made for glory. And we need to not forget that. This week, I want all of us to pray for a grace. What does that mean? To pray for a grace means to ask God for a specific gift, trusting that he will give it. And the grace we want to pray for is this one this week: to be overwhelmed in wonder at God, our Creator, and his creation. Lord, I pray for the grace to be overwhelmed in wonder at you, my Creator, and your creation. God, lift my eyes to the stars. God, remind me of why you made me. God, help me trust that you really are good and all your works are good. You can pray with some of the scriptures on that handout this week. You can pray with some of them, some of those questions, praying for this grace. And each week there'll be a different kind of grace to pray for as we come closer to Christmas. I said earlier that in God's universe, because he is the Creator, everything has meaning and everyone matters. From the greatest to the least, to the tiniest. Every Sunday, in a few minutes, we take a bit of God's creation. We take a tiny bit of bread, a tiny bit of wine. And when the Creator Spirit comes upon it, it's changed to become more than it was before. This becomes the very body and blood of Christ, the Son of God, veiled in mystery, who will one day come upon the clouds. The same thing happens to us. We are but a tiny bit of matter and a tiny bit of spirit. But when the Creator Spirit comes upon us, we are changed. We even begin to share God's own divine nature. This is who we are becoming. It's veiled in mystery. We are one day to be unveiled. We are one day to shine brighter than the stars. And so, friends, today let us allow ourselves to be overwhelmed. Let us lift our hearts to God in wonder.